Good morning and welcome. You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. Now, it is time for Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel. Every week I come and I bring you books. Books, writing and literary culture. It's half an hour every week where you get to indulge all of your literary fetishes. Is that the right word? And today, no less than any, it is the end of the month. The end of August, which means it is time for the Australian Classics Book Club. It is a segment where we look back, we rediscover, we read for the first time books that have helped shape the literary landscape that we inhabit. And as always, I have a fantastic Australian writer joining me to discuss an Australian classic. I'm umming and ahhing. Do I reveal it to you now? It is an absolute cracker. I have loved this book and I am teasing you with it. It is the Australian Classics Book Club here on Final Draft on 2SER, and I'm going to reveal which book we will be discussing after this very short break.
2SER wishes to acknowledge the custodians of the land from which we broadcast, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and the Wadumatagal clan of the Darug Nation, and their elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge and respect their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region.
Sydney Latin American Film Festival is coming soon, our city's most fun and vibrant celebration of independent cinema. Famous for their opening and closing night fiestas and Q&A sessions, you'll discover more than just your new favourite movies. Running from September 4th to 21st at Dendy Opera Keys, Addison Road Picture House, and now also at Casula Powerhouse. For tickets and more information, head to slaff.org.au. 2SER is a media partner of Sydney Latin American Film Festival.
You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel. If you have been watching the calendar, you know that as the end of the month approaches, it is time for the Australian Classics Book Club, an opportunity to look back, to discover a book that you haven't read for a while, maybe discover a book that you've always been meaning to read. Now, before I introduce today's offering in the club, I would like to introduce my guest. I am joined on the line from Melbourne by Wayne McCauley. Wayne's many and celebrated books include his 2004 debut, Blueprints for a Barbed Wire Canoe, the 2017 Miles Franklin-listed Some Tests. Keen listeners may recall Wayne and I spoke in 2014 around the release of Demons, and his latest book is Simpson Returns. Now, Wayne has written the introduction for today's text classic. We will be discussing Gerald Murnane's The Plains. Welcome, Wayne. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me, Andrew. Yeah.
I'm excited. Gerald Murnane is an absolutely fantastic person to get into, but having read The Plains, I really feel like I need someone to chat about it with, and I think you are going to be just that person. Now, normally we would have someone like David Winter here to give us an introduction to the author. Regular listeners may recall we did discuss A Lifetime on Clouds last year, so Gerald Murnane is familiar. But Wayne, perhaps you could give us an introduction to the Gerald Murnane that you know from your reading and also from your correspondence with him.
Yeah, well, it's quite some years since I first corresponded with Gerald, and I mean our correspondence has been very, very bits and bits, and you know, sometimes just a line or two. But I think since I wrote the introduction to The Plains in 2012, in the introduction I say that I'd corresponded with Gerald and not yet met Gerald. I since have a few times, including interviewing him at an event here in Melbourne. My general impression of Gerald is he's a charming gentleman. And that also he loves a chat, which is kind of interesting. You know, we often think of maybe writers like Gerald, who generally speaking, in a simplistic sense, is put on the eccentric side of the writer scale. Like people like Samuel Beckett, of course, was famously very, very silent, didn't like publicity, but Gerald really likes to have a chat. So, as someone has said to me once about interviewing Gerald, you just need to wind him up and off he goes. He's a great raconteur, storyteller, and a really lovely guy. Basically, that's the Gerald that I've met. As a writer, I truly, truly believe he is one of the most important writers we've produced in this country. That's a big call, but I sincerely believe it. I've always been a huge admirer of his work, and particularly his craft, his ability to shape sentences is just second to none. Yeah,
I think that assertion that you've just made there is well backed up. I mean, in the years since you wrote your introduction and the text classics edition came out, the New York Times has described Gerald as the greatest living English language writer that you've never heard of. His name's being discussed in relation to the Nobel Prize. Has anything changed for you in your reading of his work in those years, or is it still those first impressions that endure? Because I'm coming fresh off my first impressions of The Plains.
I thought that New York Times moment was incredibly interesting, and I did send a letter to Gerald, and he responded after that, because I remember a long time back when we corresponded, particularly talking about The Plains, because The Plains, of course, came out in the States not long after it was released in the 80s. But much to Gerald's chagrin, there was a single review over there that killed it, essentially, and it was a terrible review, and the book basically died in the States. So I think, and Gerald shared this with me, and he was very conscious about the fact that, that he'd never be able to break it in the States. He of course, is a huge fan of Kerouac's and has, imagined American Plains as much as he's imagined Australian Plains. So I think, so that recognition, I think, was pretty critical, because it was coming from a major US newspaper. And, of course, it has changed the perception of him in the public eye, no question of it. But I guess, I'll have to be honest, from my point of view, I've had no problem calling him a genius since I first read his work way back in the 80s. I totally think all of the recent hoo-ha about him is entirely justified, and I think it's a wonderful thing that he's still with us in his 80s, and that he can kick back and enjoy all the praise. I think it's absolutely overdue, totally overdue. Mm.
That is a fascinating thing to know about the American reception, or perhaps the lack of reception. I can see, having read The Plains, how a certain reading of it from an audience that's not Australian could be misunderstood, misinterpreted. They could read it in a certain way and think, this book has nothing to say to me. But we are talking about the book without telling people about it. I think we should introduce The Plains, because it's a fascinating novel. It opens on an unnamed narrator arriving on the plains with the intention of making a film that shows the plains as they have never been seen before. And across three sections, our narrator, we see him haunting a pub, talking with plainsmen about their world, on the property, and most particularly in the library of his benefactor, a plains landowner, and finally, considering the success or failure of his work in progress some 20 years after it began. When I lay it out like that, it seems a curious story, and I don't think for a second I've captured what I found so gripping about the book. Do you have any recollection of your first impressions of reading it? Because I'm still working through this, and you're almost my therapist here, Wayne.
Well, I think my first impressions, and they are actually still pretty clear to me, I suppose, are two things. The first is simply the prose style. Like Patrick White is generally considered one of our great Australian writers, and I've always loved the prose of White and others, as well, like Christina Stead and others. I guess at that stage, especially, I was very much into the Europeans, and I suppose very much into the, if you like, European avant-garde, maybe, or books that were not so much of the mainstream, but were stylistically braver. But I just simply had not read an Australian book with a prose style anything like this. Not just its adventurousness, but also its polish. It's incredible craft, And I suppose the second thing was that nor had I yet read a book in Australia about the Australia, about whatever it is this is. I don't know how to describe it, the Australian sort of experience of space, time, odd, strange, kind of things like that. Sort of hard to describe, but definitely I felt like I was reading a new vision of potential literature in this country. I just, so that were my two distinct impressions, that this was a craft beyond anything I'd read from an Australian writer before, and also that this was a kind of a vision or a placement of us, the reader, into a vision that of Australia that was completely new and completely fresh and very weird and unexpected as well. You know, you just don't forget the images, but when you're in the plains, they do stay with you.
I think I'm going to latch on to the phrase you use, they're hard to describe, because it does help me with my thought process that there is something there, there is something that I need to describe, but it is very difficult. One analogy that I was trying to latch onto, and I liked the way you said weird there, because it very much marries with this. I was thinking of Twin Peaks for some strange reason. Now, the landscape of the plains is nothing like the landscape of David Lynch's Twin Peaks, but... And we don't have the same weirdness that Lynch creates, but there is very much this sense that whilst everything may look very prosaic, normal on the surface, there are undercurrents that are of enormous import.
I think that's a really interesting observation, because if my memory serves me, those two things, the plains and Twin Peaks, must have been around the same time, or certainly something in the atmosphere that I remember, because I also was a complete devotee of Twin Peaks when it came out. And you're right that as Lynch does with his filmmaking, the name likewise does with his prose, which is that he sort of ruffles the surface of reality, and that something else kind of shimmers behind it, and you see you're invited into a different way of seeing, you know, what we call the reality that is surface, but that there is some other sort of arcane mystery underneath, and that's why I think the plains is so hard to describe.
This is Final Draft on 2SER 107.3. My name's Andrew Popel, and I am in conversation with Wayne McCauley in the Australian Classics Book Club. We are discussing Gerald Murnane's The Plains. Right now, we're going to take a track before we come back for the second half of our book club conversation. This is new from Broads. It is called Emily.
Chaperone was a failure, and her mouth, it was unclean. No use a retainer when there's no containing Emily. Ooh.
On 2SER this September, tune in for Talk of the Town on Sunday nights from 8 p.m. for the best talks from around Sydney. Talk of the Town kicks off on September 8th with the debate, Love is All We Need. Or is it? This debate was recorded at UTS and features Stephen Oliver, Chelsea Bond, Wesley Enoch, plus many more. Talk of the Town, this September from 8 p.m. Sunday nights on 2SER.
Good morning, this is 2SER 107.3. You're in the Final Draft Australian Classics Book Club. Right there we heard a track from Broads, that was Emily, and now we're getting back into the book club. I am in conversation with Wayne McCauley, and we are discussing Gerald Murnane's 1980 novel, The Plains. I want to just think about this idea of plains. The word is used an extraordinary number of times throughout the book. I didn't count, but it's. I feel like it's on every page. When I first dived into the opening section, I was very much caught in the literal sense of a landscape that might somewhere exist. And it's very much suggested that it could exist, that you couldn't locate it, that it could be all places at once. And then the many and varied planes of the narrator's imaginings, they seem to me to become both a physical and a metaphysical expanse. And I had this sense that I had perhaps misread the entire opening section by thinking too literally.
Yeah, I think that's... and that's exactly what Gerald does in so much of his work, because so much of his work is about, as he, I think, would describe it, as sort of the images behind the eyes, you know, the images behind our eyes. And that is that that initial... I mean, in some ways, the book starts in a kind of almost sort of standard lonely, you know, character arriving in a foreign or, unexpected place.
A little bit Wake in Fright. Almost.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Right. Right in there, and there's probably, you know, that trope is throughout the and film, of course, as well, you know, which is ironic. But you know, the lone cowboy, you know, riding into town, that sort of feeling, that's how the work starts. And yeah, at that point, of course, the plains are clearly not metaphorical, but real. And that is to say that there are people called plainsmen who live, you know, sort of out on the other side or away from the coast towards the interior. And similarly, as the word plains is repeated, you'll note also that the word interior begins to get repeated as well. So initially, we seem to be hovering in, you know, a slightly filmic landscape perhaps, but still a landscape that has had its own reality, has its own rules, customs, speech patterns, and so on. But then, of course, because of the repetition and the hard looking, if you like, at that so-called reality, the planes themselves become something else, and they become, of course, metaphorical, and they lead us away from reality into imagination. I think that's what Gerald does extraordinarily, not so much in a structured way with a short book like The Plains, but more, in a much, I suppose, in a sense, richer and more complex way in his longer works. But he's always sort of taking us away from our initial impression of an image to the image behind the image. And I think that's true of the word The Plains in this book.
I would never be so crass as to accuse someone of being postmodern, but I wondered about where Gerald is being knowing in the way that he challenges the reader, because there was a line that I jotted down, and this is from very close to the end of the book. As you've noted, Wayne, it's quite a short novel. I think it's at 174 pages. And so this is three quarters of the way too, and we have the plains described as simply a convenient source of metaphors for those who know that men invent their own meanings. And that line floored me, and I had to go back and think, 141 pages, and this brilliant writer has simply just led me down a path and allowed me to create the story around it. It was wonderful and confusing.
Yeah, he's a very good man. And that's true, you know. I mean, of course, I'm sure Gerald would throw his hands up in despair at the word postmodern, because he, you know, I don't think, I mean, that particular ism, you know, I don't think was even sort of in the culture, you know, strong enough for an Australian writer here to be thinking, I'm a postmodern writer. I think that self-awareness comes with the territory, which is, you know, Manet is working in this kind of, what do you call it, investigative territory, the idea of not just describing surfaces, but asking questions about what's beneath and what's beyond. Mm. So, all of that lends itself to what has since, of course, become the label postmodern, that is a self-awareness, the writer aware of writing and so on. And it is a thread through Gerald's work, but I'm not sure he'd be comfortable with that. Mm. Is he? Yeah.
That was why I felt it's so necessary to kind of condition my even bringing that word into the conversation. Can I ask you a little bit about the interweaving of humour and satire with what I might call the philosophy of the novel? Because there are some really fascinating parts where I feel like there's so much going on, but nothing ever happens in the plains. And this is particularly in the first section. And then... Oh. There is the absolutely wonderful evocation of this ongoing tale in the plains, the feud between the Horizonites and the Hairmen, which I don't think I could do justice to, but it felt like this incredible and amazing grand feud that really, when you looked at the actions that were described, was really only ever just a few brawls after a local polo match was all it ever amounted to. But I wasn't
completely
sure.
Absurd. It's completely mad and wonderful. Mm. You know, I mean, look, your listeners just have to read it to get that particular Manetian humour, because it's wonderful, and it's part of the reason that I've always loved this work, because there is absolutely a what we might call a serious undercurrent to all of Gerald's work, but there is also this wild and sometimes completely insane humour that comes out of sort of pitting one image or idea against another in a classic kind of, you know, almost comedy sense, really. Mm. Certainly comedy, but, you know, the way that these clashes of ideas like that, for example, and the way that it becomes so grandiose and so important, clearly has, you know, it's writing with tongue-in-cheek. It's it's inviting the reader into it, that's really partly what I love about the work. And you find these flashes like this and through all of his work where suddenly you find yourself, you know, you're deeply engaged and then suddenly stepping out and smiling and going, how did he just turn me around like that? You know? And in the plains, of course, I feel like there is a small undercurrent that's kind of smiling humour.
So what then are we to make of the narrator's project to create a film of the plains? Because we have this real tension between the interior. The film is entitled The Interior, and at the beginning of the book it seems this tangible possibility, and it then just drifts further and further away from reality and becomes, and there's a passage towards the book's conclusion where the whole project, it seems to have become this corpus of notes and writing. And I felt like we were now talking about the pursuit of art and the role that art has in actually telling us anything, and I wondered how much I should be looking at Gerald's own understanding of his writing. I don't know if he was ever a filmmaker himself, but he has some really interesting and sometimes I felt harsh things to say about writing and writing's ability to capture, but it was very interesting to sort of go through those passages.
To go back to that thorny postmodern thing, but I do think that particular story thread in the plains is self-referential. I mean, it's hard for me as a writer not to read it as a metaphor for writing, particularly for writing a novel, where you can get lost in the details, lost in the forest of details, and can't find your way through, and the two step forward, one step back, all of those things I can certainly relate to as a writer. And I do think that in that way, the filmmaker in the plains is metaphoric for perhaps Gerald's position. And the other thing about the filmmaker, I think, is that Gerald himself has said in, you know, many interviews and also his essays, for example, in I've just forgotten that the Lilacs title, which is a collection of essays, mm-hmm. You know, has really clearly said that looking, seeing, that the image for him is everything. But all he is ever doing really is trying to describe the images as they pass through his retina. So in a sense, you know, the filmmaking analogy for him, I would argue, and this is, you know, right back in the 80s when this was written and published, that also is a true metaphor for the writer Gerald Manet, that he sees things visually, and he says that many times in interviews and so on, that his reality is image reality. He's trying as best he can to describe the images.
That creates such an interesting tension then with the scenes. There is a section of the book where the narrator describes these bizarre trips that the landowner puts together to create the scenes, and he sort of poses people in this strange way, which is very much set against the narrator's own inability to capture images, but except in words.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, between the two, if you like, between the two media, I think is where the narrator has kind of got lost. He's trying to work in a visual medium, but the clutter of, you know, image ideas, which actually is another term that Gerald often uses, the clutter of image ideas as opposed to simply images, is getting in the way of you know what would be otherwise a spooling, unraveling, unfolding of images, which is what we consider when we think about a film, you know, or a screenplay for a film. I think it's in that liminal space between being a writer who is most concerned with images and that thinks of ideas only in an imagistic sense. For sure, in that way, I suppose there has to be some autobiographical element to the playing.
We have described this book in so many ways. Brilliant. I've made a only to be judged by others comparison with Twin Peaks. It is The Plains by Gerald Manet, and I have been joined by Wayne McCauley to discuss it in the Australian Classics Book Club. Wayne, as we say goodbye, I think you said it best earlier. I think the only way is for people to get out and read The Plains. This is truly a fascinating, magnificent book.
2CR is turning 40, and we need your help to complete our archival records. We're hosting a pop-up archiving day on Saturday, September 28th at Studios 301. Bring your old 2CR photos, reel-to-reel, or that one cassette that's gathering dust in a shoebox under your bed, and help us fill in the gaps in 2CR's history. Register your interest at 2cr.com/40th birthday and tune in to Weekend Breakfast Deep Dives in the Archives.
We have reached the end of another episode of Final Draft. You're on 2SER 107.3, and it has been books, writing, and literary culture. If you missed anything in the Australian Classics Book Club today, if you want to catch up and discover more of my conversation with Wayne McCauley about Gerald Manet's The Plains, it will be going up on the Great Conversations, the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast, in just a couple of minutes. So wherever you get your podcast, search Final Draft, search Great Conversations, subscribe, and we'll be there. Vulture's Nest is coming up next. I'm going away. Till next week, happy reading.